Oh my goodness.
I know.
Oh my goodness. Here we are.
We were just
here
We were stargazing. We were picking lilies or whatever, daisies. Hello everyone. It's Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, the Daily Edition, MMSD, as I like to call it in shorthand, where Kai and I try to make today make sense one day at a time.
One day at a time. Today, as it happens, is What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. We take your questions. We have, honestly, Sam Anderson tells us, gotten so many we have lost count. The Google Doc is at 47 pages, so keep sending them. He calls it pretty often, goes through it, goes all the way to the bottom of page 47 to look for good ones. So let's hit it here, shall we?
Yes, Michelle. With that in mind, we better like plow through as many as we can. Go, go, go.
Yes. So there's a lot in this first question, but we're going to – there's actually two. The first one comes from Craig Rosshaven. I apologize if that is a mispronunciation. Maybe it's Rosshaven. I don't know. Anyway, what happens when states run out of money to pay unemployment claims? Most states are prohibited by their constitutions from running a deficit. That is true. Sung Kim from Hawaii has a follow-up to that, which is, can states go bankrupt, as Mitch McConnell said he would prefer to see last week? If so, what can happen? What would be the services in most danger of being eliminated or being curtailed? So let's go back to number one. What happens when states run out of money to pay unemployment claims? Well, so here's the deal. Money for the unemployment fund comes from a federal unemployment tax. So it is federal money administered by the states. The states can supplement that, but it's almost always overwhelmingly federal money. And as it stands now, right, or well, before the crisis, it was 26 weeks at some percentage of your pay. Now it's more than that, in some cases, a good deal more than that for a longer period of time. But it's not like states are going to run out. The catch is when federal benefits stop paying, right? That's an issue. That's the issue, really.
It is. And I think it's, is it 4 months, I want to say, the amount of time that the expanded unemployment is? And then it goes to like regular?
It actually varies by state, right? And I know this, actually. Well, because I've been doing this freaking job for 18 years. But also, I know it because I just recently did a Make Me Smart explainer on the Alexa devices, written by one Erica Phillips, talking about unemployment systems and how they vary through the state. So depending on where you live, you may get more or less than the average. Yeah, for sure. It's actually it's actually totally fascinating.
So that at least, Craig, is one bit of debt that states will not have to worry about. However, there are so many more. So many more. This second question from Sung Kim. Well, yeah. So,
well, so the deal is, go ahead. We all want to answer this question. Go ahead.
No. They can't.
Snap. Touché.
Next.
Yeah, they can't. The law says they can't. They're excluded from that chapter of the bankruptcy code. Municipalities can, counties can, right? That's Detroit did not too many years ago. Orange County, back if you remember that far, they were the first county to go bankrupt. And then what happens is at the county and municipality level, right, pensions get cut and services get cut. But at a state level, that cannot happen.
And what is interesting about this conversation is that bankruptcy, as we know, is not a declaration that you are out of money necessarily. It is a declaration that you cannot pay your debt. And states, in this case, in the crisis that we're seeing, and there was a Washington Post story today that's just brutal about how states and cities are already starting to lay people off, furlough city and state workers. And I mean, you know, government workers do, to use a word that I believe is in vogue right now, really essential things like education, sanitation, safety, health, critical public services. So states, this isn't a problem of debt. Bankruptcy, ironically, is not even the right mechanism for states to deal with a problem that ultimately is a complete lack of revenue. And so I think asking whether they can go bankrupt is even like a good question. And leads to so many more answers that are like, that's not even, shouldn't even be on the table.
Right.
Not the point.
Right.
Absolutely
right. Yep.
Yes. All right. Tom Butler is asking the question that's pretty much on everyone's mind right now, which is, I'm sorry, Lakers? Did you say Lakers? I'm paraphrasing what Tom Butler actually said, which is, how come large corporations got so much bailout funding? I thought that was supposed to go to small business. Can't the corporate boards just sell more stock or get loans or issue bonds to raise funds? What is being done to hold their feet to the fire and get the money where it's supposed to be? so many answers. Oh, no, this is I'm
good.
Yeah, I'm going to interpret this to be with regard to the PPP program and unrelated to the actual sort of bailout funding in that first package.
Oh, yeah, 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 because, yeah. No, this is not the airlines and all that jazz, right? That's different.
Yep, exactly. This is not the airlines and all of that. This is like, how right. did big companies end up getting such a huge share right. of the PPP program, the Small Business Administration thing? And look, the simple answer is not simple and is kind of tricky. It's because there weren't any rules.
Yeah.
It's because the SBA yeah. stood up this program essentially overnight. And it's so funny because people say that a lot. Like, oh, well, they had to move so fast. And I'm like, well, if they had started preparing for this in January,
right.
maybe not. Yeah. However,
they did have to move fast.
Didn't.
Right? Let's say that. They did have to move fast. But as we right. have talked before on this podcast, the Trump administration's disdain for the federal bureaucracy is part of what handicapped the SBA getting going on this.
Exactly. So they stood it up really quickly. They moved very quickly, and there just simply were not a lot of guidelines. And those guidelines, you know, yep. for example, it did not even prohibit public companies who do have the ability to sell more stock or get loans or issue bonds from applying for these PPP loans. Like mm-hmm. some pretty simple error correcting did not occur in the first round. And then now you have this weird situation where, yes, Mnuchin has come out and said, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin has come out and said, we're going to audit any loan that was over $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing, like,
which is going to slow things down?
Which is super going to slow things down. And look, I'm as appalled as anybody that this happened. It is crazy that there were simple if-then rules that were not in place. If public company, then no, you know, whatever. But like, you also can't say that these companies broke the rules.
No, they didn't. All they had to do was sign that it was necessary to their continued operations, right? And they took the money because it was available, and you'd be a moron not to. It's a forgivable loan for $10 million. You kidding me?
Exactly.
Right?
And so now there's all this like, you took the money and you should have to give it back. I think Axios is one of the organizations. There's, you took money and you should have to give it back because you're venture funded, and there's this and that. And there's all this like, I'm sorry. There weren't any rules. And if you think these companies didn't think it was their fiduciary duty to get whatever money they could when it was being handed out with no strings attached, like, I don't know. If you were surprised that that happened, you haven't been here long.
And Axios is a really good example in answer to the second part of Tom's question. What is being done to hold their feet to the fire? Public shaming. Public shaming.
Yeah.
Right? Retroactive public shaming.
Shouldn't be the mechanism because it will
run an economy, man.
I can't even tell you. I spent like at way too long on background calls about what in the heck has been happening with the PPP program today. And the more I hear, the more I'm just like,
yep.
Wow. Wow.
It's a mess.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Ned Carson writes this. I'm a teacher and I'm very grateful for all of Google's products, especially during this extended run of distance learning. That said, should I be worried about the privacy implications of Google's dominance in K-12 education products? How might Google leverage the vast amounts of information they can harvest from their classroom products both now and in the future? I'm certainly not about to revert to an old-fashioned snail mail correspondence class for my sixth graders, but are we not entering into a bit of a Faustian bargain? These kids will be American consumers for decades, and I shudder to think of what Google could do with everything they could glean. This is interesting. This is kind of an evergreen sort of tech in education kind of question, right?
It is, yeah. And actually, I'm pretty sure we've answered a version of this on the show before, but it's even more relevant now because kids who weren't necessarily using a lot these tools, digital tools, are using a whole bunch of them now, and they're getting signed up for Google accounts that they might not have had before. And yes, you should be worried about the privacy implications of Google's dominance in K-12 education.
But what's he supposed to do? It's not like you can opt out. If your school goes to Chromebooks, ta-da!
Right. Yep. There's a reason that MacBooks before that, it's just the difference between like Apple making MacBooks really accessible to students and even Microsoft making tools really available to students is that those are not giant ad-supported businesses and Google is. Now, one important caveat I will point out here is that the COPPA, Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, specifically forbids the collection of data about anybody who's under 13. And so presumably the school licenses that Google I know, I hear you. Believe me, we're all as skeptical as can be.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay.
Because, yes. But one would hope, and I would imagine that if you're in an education agreement, especially public school, like there's some auditing of that that's happening. Yeah. I'm dreaming. There's no auditing of that that's happening, but there should be. And it would probably not be worth it to collect all of that data now, knowing how bad the lawsuit would be if it were ever found out. Once your kids get to eighth grade, though,
yeah,
indeed, they are American consumers for decades, and they have brand loyalty.
Yep.
Ugh. Okay. Maybe last question. What are we at? 11 minutes? I don't know. We'll see how much we can do here. Okay. Kel Utendorf. I love that name, and I want to say it all day long. Kel Utendorf is sheltering in Ohio and wants to know, oh, bless, what do each of you do to maintain your sanity and positivity during this COVID-19 outbreak? What are your support systems? I can certainly step away from the news if I need to get away from the fire hose of information, most of which seems to be depressing. However, both of you live in that world and need to immerse yourselves in it daily in order to provide us, the audience, with your informed thoughts. How are you dealing with this? Kai? Punt, oh, pass to Kai.
I knew you were going
to. I read the question, so you have to answer first. It's in the rules.
Wait, is that right the paradigm? There. I don't know. Oh my God.
It's in the bywords or whatever, the bylaws.
Yeah. So look, two things. Number one, and this is going to sound like corporate brown nosing BS, but I've said it before and I'll say it again. I love my job. I truly do. And the happiest 28 minutes and 45 seconds of my day, minus this 15 minutes that I get to do now for the past month and a half, is when I'm standing in front of a microphone doing Marketplace. So that really helps. The other thing, though, as a counterbalance, is that I'm just really bad at self-care. I'm just really bad at self-care. And so I just gut it out.
So you're
Which is why, by the way, those beers on Friday are so important, might I just say.
Yeah, totally. But the discipline is important too. Pretty much the same. We are really, honestly, we are really lucky. Like we do.
Oh,
I was joking
sure.
earlier today that it's Wednesday, which means I'm halfway through my progress toward hollowed out shell of a human, which I'll hit on Friday. and then I will recharge over the weekend with a strict diet of no news and mild homesteading. But we are super lucky. Like, yes, we have to look at the news and yes, we get. Yeah, as you see, like emotional all the time.
Yep.
But thank God, like we have somewhere to put it. We have
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We have somewhere to put it. That's exactly right. Yeah.
And we have an opportunity, like however small, to influence the conversation, to make somebody smarter, to encourage critical thinking about the things that you're hearing. And frankly, like that's it. That's if I were just sitting around reading the news and also you know, working from home as an architect or something who was worried about the future of her job, it'd be a whole different scene. We get to like come up here and burp it out. I'm having Mexican Coke, which I'm currently enjoying right now.
we're going to go out on that little metaphor right there. That
China,
little visual
literally.
Cue from Mollywood. Oh my God. We are back tomorrow with a regular news fix. Holy cow. As I talked about up top, though, tell your Echo device to make me smart. Here are daily explainers. I apparently am on there today explaining hazard pay.
Apparently you are.
Apparently. I don't know.
Those are, you know, I got to say, the explainers are like outstanding right now. They're super interesting. I did one on antibody tests. Yeah, no, they're like, they're really good.
Call out to the Tuesday show. I learned the difference between antibodies and antigens. And oh my God, could biomedical scientists be more pain in the buttish than to name those two things the same thing or close to the same thing, but have them mean opposites? Come on,
man. Kind of true. Yeah, that is pretty sciencey. But now it's an explainer. And see, it's a virtuous circle.
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
All right. I think that's it. Going. Oh, send us your questions.
I took your blurb. You were supposed to take mine, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I knew that. Send us your questions. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Put questions in the subject line. We'll answer them again. It's not like we do this every day or anything.
It's usually seamless, people. It's usually seamless.
See you tomorrow. Awkward pause goes here. It said it in the script.
That's right.
Right there. Yeah, for sure. No one's going to know. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner, who even now is trying to figure out some sort of screen sharing proof system. Our senior producer is Jody Becker. Ben Hethcote is our video producer. Ethan Peretz is our video intern. And thank you to writer-producer Erica Phillips.
Drew Jostad engineered the show today. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. There we go.
Mexico. Do, do, do.
So doesn't it, but it makes your teeth all sticky, right?
Yeah, for sure. You pretty much have to brush your
which
teeth
I
immediately
miss.
After you have a Mexico.
I kind of miss that about Cokes from my childhood. That was always fun. You got to like stick
it in. Well, and see, the Mexicos don't do it quite as much because it's just cane sugar. So you don't have that weird sour. Yeah, that's they're it's a much more pleasant experience all the way around. Plus, in a bottle.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.